Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. The story starts from the formless, the yet-to-be-organized earth. And then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And then God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning the first day. I'm wondering here, as I see him taking charge, and for the purposes of the stories I'm going to tell today, I'm going with him, but anybody taking charge in that way, I can't help picture sort of a strong woman saying, "Let's get this going," but yet I digress. So God, he starts adding order to what is formless. Water is separated from the sky. The land and the sea are divided. Vegetation is added, and day and night, and living creatures, birds, and what they call sea monsters in most translations. And that's just by day 5. And finally, living creatures of every kind and humankind. So then God blesses them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish in the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." God said, "See, I have given you every plant that has a seed. I have given you your food and your fruit." And it was so. God saw that everything he had made was good. And then he left the seventh day for rest. So God had had this pretty productive week. He had moved from formless to order. Some folks use the termination moving from chaos. A lot of times people take the term, the sense of formless or chaos, and even the term evil as the challenges, and you move to the order and the good. So I think there's a couple takeaways as we get started from this Genesis creation story. First, we hear the message, for creation to be good, there needs to be order. We also hear that humans, at least in this story version, are given dominion over all of it. And so it's on us that should we mess it up, which is likely to occur, we're supposed to spend some energy to restore order. Order was a valued part of the way of many, many creation stories were told. So as we picture chaos, you can picture a Bible version, you can picture your own version, but the definition is something like utter confusion and inherent unpredictability. And I think often in those times, when things are really unpredictable and things are really confused, think of the noises of the city, our instinct is survival. By nature, we want to usually end chaos, to move to some sort of greater safety or comfort. Often it's to restore some sort of order. As I think of chaos in more modern terms, I've wondered about what would it be like on those last hours on the Titanic, or the mass evacuations from the wildfires in California, or the unprecedented numbers of families that are at the borders. We watch it, but for some of the folks that are in that midst, I know we have folks here that do have connections to California, and that sense of fire and the sense of what can't be controlled, we can picture those experiences. Where do you go in those moments? So if we now go back to the biblical stories, though, for a minute, here's the thing. God hadn't solved chaos. by giving us 7 days worth of work or 6 days worth of work and a day off. All of a sudden, the Genesis story goes on. We're in the Garden of Eden, people eating forbidden fruits. Cain is murdering his brother Abel. And God, however you want to think of God for this story, the expectations hadn't been met. Things were crazed and there was reckless behavior around. God sensed that was evil, chaotic, and I'm guessing he or she was at least a little ticked off. He thought he had given everything that was needed. So then the story goes on. He says, I've got an idea. I'm starting over. From the Bible, I will blot out from the earth the human beings I have created, for I am so sorry I have made them. But then God has second thoughts. He reminds himself of the good, and he reminds himself that there's this guy, Noah, not a perfect guy, but a really, really decent guy, a righteous man. And God chooses a plan B. I think we all sometimes need a plan B. We need a second choice. And he instructs Noah to build an ark. And with down rigging this weekend, it's something that I picture. I actually took the time to walk down there Friday and to look around and look at all the detail that goes into building a boat or an ark. And God gives Noah very specific instructions on sizes and dimensions and pitches and tarps and whatever they called it back then. I'm probably not the one to be exactly telling the story because I told, was it David or Carl, this week we were talking and I said, yeah, all the boats were parked in a really cool way. He said, they docked them. Another digression. But from here, I think you know some of the basic story. God has a plan to get rid of this chaos once again. And God tells Noah to bring his family and two of every animal onto the ark. God is up front when he talks to Noah. He said, I am going to start over more or less. There is a big flood coming. He wasn't going to go back to formless, but he was going to wipe out life other than Noah. So here in the story, Noah is trusting. Noah does not know how this is going to play out. God tells Noah, there's going to be a covenant or a promise made to you in some time. It gives no details. And in 7 days, the flood comes. And on the earth, for 40 days and 40 nights, every living thing that I have made was blotted out from the face of the ground. We hear in the story that the waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters swelled and increased greatly on earth, and the ark floated on the face of those waters. The waters swelled so mightily on the earth that all of the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. And the water swelled above the mountains, covering them from 15 cubits deep, and the waters swelled on the earth for 150 days. Then God said to Noah, go out of the ark. So Noah went out with his sons and wives and every animal, every creeping thing, and went out by families. Then God said to Noah, as for me, I'm establishing my covenant with you and your descendants, that never again shall all flesh be cut off from the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. That was the promise that God made to Noah. God was promising not to inflict evil. He was going to leave the chaos and the restarts in the future to us. So chaos, utter confusion and inherent unpredictability. I often hear that folks nowadays feel that we are living in chaotic times. We're not making it up. I think as you measure chaos, there's an author, Bruno Marion, and he finds there's sort of three big contributors to this sense we have of chaos. One is there are so many people on the earth. We have gone from about 1 billion to about 8 billion in about 150 years. Eight times as many people. people can get closer to one another. It used to be people lived in very isolated communities, and you didn't have communities bumping into each other in the same way. So there's speed. And then there's connectivity. There's information coming at us all the time. So I'm wondering sometimes when I hear that we're in chaotic times, I don't think necessarily we're the first ones that have ever gone through chaotic times. It is the foundational stories we hear. It has happened in people's personal lives and in the extended world forever. And yet our attention is pulled to continual disruption and our fear response goes up. And I think we each feel the societal risks in different ways. In our personal lives, disruption comes at us in different times with different intensities, sometimes for sustained periods, sometimes just in an emergency. So I don't think I'm even going to try to answer the question, is the natural state of the world chaotic or not? I think there's enough randomness in all that happens around us that chaos is a reality of life. There's complexity, there's interdependency, there's that ripple effect. When one little thing happens somewhere, we feel it in different ways. And when we're in chaos, when chaos is around us, we are vulnerable. And vulnerable in its pure state is sort of we are at risk of being harmed. We're that open, whether it's emotionally or physically. Chaos throws what we think is going to happen and expect out the window. So how do we react? I think it's a question of where we put energy. It's not as much time, but where we put energy. We can spend all of our energy trying to return to order, doing everything we can to get back to some place of stability. I think that's what we often do because we want, in our mind, our nostalgic brain tells us then we'll be safe if we get that order back. I think when we are in that mode, we're always thinking about all the things that are undone, the piles needing our attention, all the ways that if we just had ourselves organized or the world organized and everybody complying, it would all be okay. With order comes productivity. And then we think, then we can create again. So I want to think about that cycle just for a minute. Let's go back to Noah. How did Noah respond in chaos? He was told it was about to happen. He was not Job. If you remember the story of Job, Job wrestles with God. Job is always, he's the logic guy going, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? But that was not what Noah did. Noah went a bit more with the flood, with the waves and the storms. He didn't know what a new normal would be after the chaos. He didn't put a lot of energy into trying to figure that out, but he did what he absolutely needed to do that time, because I think in an emergency and chaos, he was told to build an ark, good idea. And then he went into a relational response with God. Whether you think of the divine, however you think of the divine, Noah then put his trust in something and said, I'm going to have to trust something because I can't predict the future. So there was risk and unpredictability all around him. And in this moment, he suspended that. So I've wondered too, how do our Unitarian Universalist values serve us in a time of chaos? How do they support us? Whether we think of it as sometimes we'll say white supremacy culture, I don't mean just how white people behave, but I mean all the things around us that value order. It comes through our heritage, it comes through ancient stories, and we put a lot of value on getting things back organized, getting things out of the way so we can rush through that vulnerability place. We want the predictability. I think sometimes we're afraid to ask new questions in that moment of chaos. Do we sometimes try to fix things before we learn? I think our UU values, and I say this in a sort of broad sense, they're a strength. They move us toward action. UUs, Unitarian Universalists, however you identify here, are not sideline folks. We are problem solvers. We design plans, we implement, and we deliver. We've got that part of the Genesis instruction down. Yet, like all strengths, there's a shadow side to even our most productive and caring responses. What feels chaotic to you? Why am I thinking this is balancing? Give me 1 second. That was rude. Philip, everything I told you.
That's me.
Yeah, this is just sort of us. give me one more second.
Chaos.
There was something that I looked at in the back room earlier that makes no sense right now. But anyway, we digress. Ah, I was wrong about my cues. I just found it. It's on another page. Sorry about that. Back in flow. I do think we do have a shadow side to our Unitarian Universalist places. And Philip, I would be starting the top of page 6 right now. So I ask us to pause together. If these feel like chaotic times for you, where is your attention drawn in times of chaos? What feels like chaos or major disruption? What feels like that? I can picture maybe a few answers flashing through your heads, not all the same answers. Some current, some past times. Let's just take a moment as we play through Find a Stillness one time and see and listen to your own hearts. What feels chaotic? Sensing chaos or disruption at this time. That's also good to know. When everyone around you says the sky is falling, that might not be your experience. Whose experience might it be? Who is experiencing chaos, and where in society are the greatest risks? Pause again. Hear the music. Chaos that you have, more of a Titanic-like chaos, or what I'll call fresh perspective chaos. The latter, that time where things feel somewhat chaotic, but there's a chance for a fresh perspective. Maybe the danger is not quite as imminent. Where is the unpredictability something that may help us change? There's news talk of impeachment. We've got the Ukraine matter. Who will vote how and why? There are even more implicit worries, I think, that are about order. People are stressing about how the rule of law will be honored, however that rule is used. Can we trust in the checks and balances? These questions, folks, are going to go on for a while. Find your center. Find the place that for you helps you get clarity on what's going to happen. I think we worry that we're going to go back to a formless earth, and we're not. We're in one chapter in a very, very long story. And there's a place that we can learn. There's a place that we can be our best Noah. I was thinking of the Nationals too. There's places where rules work for you and not, the controversial play, what is base interference or not, moments that seem so important at the time, and then a return to perspective. So what if, rather than worrying about a return to order, what if chaos is a window of opportunity for change? Maybe that's when we get the most clear on what we value, not that we can tackle everything, but maybe we could learn to live with less order. What might that open up for us? Some of the work in Emergent Strategies by Adrienne Brown asks us to consider swirling patterns and make sense of little pockets of it, rather than trying to always do a top-down way of thinking. Where can we develop relationships in the local? How do we let that emerge as what we value and find clarity at each step of the way? There's a whole way of looking at the world that says Genesis maybe didn't have it right by always fighting to have more and more order. What if we learn to live in the chaos a little differently? Maybe rename it a bit. Because each generation faces a time of chaos. And we can't always control what's around us. Chaos, in its pure sense, makes that impossible. But we do have options for response. So when we sense chaos and disruption, may we first breathe deep. May we find a trusted partner, partner for the conversation, and not ask for the solution for the chaos, but ponder the why of the chaos. And we have options. Sometimes you do need to respond in emergency fashion, but often you can make choices about jumping in. You can have the role of witness. You can look for the fresh perspective or the new questions. So my hope for us, and whatever our times are ahead, is that we walk and not run in a direction, solid in our step, and being ready to pause again and again as we reflect and align with the greater good, a greater good named in many ways, but worthy of our patient attention. I think we'll be just as effective if we add that pause into our lives. Amen. Blessed be you. Amen.